Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Mad Tech Podcast. My name is Lindsay Rowntree. I am head of content at Exchange Wire. I am joined again by our CEO, Kieran O'Kane.
Hello, Lindsay.
Hello. We had to rush this episode because unfortunately Kieran has to rush off at Pilates.
Yeah.
None taken.
I'm gonna be like, get ripped.
You're gonna get ripped.
Yeah.
I mean, those that
building
know you,
up a body strength.
Those that know you will be pissing themselves laughing right now. Frankly.
I'm a fine specimen man.
Okay. If you say so.
A lump of Irish beef.
We might have to cut that. That's giving me horrendous. That would give people nightmares, I reckon. Anyway, on to our special guest this week is Christian Gladwell. He is CEO of M&C Saatchi Performance. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Lindsay.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Yeah. No Pilates for you after this?
No Pilates. And for the record, I'm not a lump of Irish beef.
You don't sound like one.
Well,
so, yeah.
Appearance is deceptive and all that sort of stuff.
Shall we? Well, let's move on from Pilates, shall we? We could talk. Yeah. I'd love to know more about what Kieran's up to, but at the same time, I'm terrified.
Pretty hammer. It's just, you know.
Just a Pilates.
Modern man.
Yeah,
modern man.
Of course.
Brian O'Driscoll did it for a prolonged his career by 10 years, so.
There you go.
Yeah. I don't really play rugby, but.
Posture, upper body strength, it's very important.
Yeah, you know. You've got to look good in can as well, you know.
You've got to look good in can.
Yeah.
I mean, of course. Yeah.
That's, right.
Again, stop scaring our listeners, please.
Yeah.
Anyway, our first story this week is from The Times. The headline is Google backer Sequoia Capital bets on UK tech. This is news that Sequoia Capital is going to start stalking, as The Times put it, stalking British tech startups ahead of a post-Brexit buying spree. They plan on opening an office in London this year and have already attempted to steal several partners from rival VC firms. Haven't done so yet, but apparently they're on the lookout. For those that don't know much about Sequoia Capital, they've already invested in more than 250 businesses with a market value of £2.5 trillion. And their UK investments to date include microchip designer Graphcore and beauty brand Charlotte Tilbury. Are you a fan of Charlotte Tilbury, Kieran?
What is that?
It's a beauty brand.
No.
No?
What is it? It's like facial cream.
Yeah, foundation, like makeup.
I don't wear makeup.
No, okay.
I haven't got to that.
Don't need to,
yet.
That alabaster Irish skin.
I've got great skin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. And their Welsh billionaire Sir Michael Moritz is a partner of theirs, and he led an investment worth $12.5 million into Google in 1999. 6 years on, that same stake was worth $4.3 billion. So, you know, you
not
can
terrible.
Make it. It's not
terrible.
I've seen worse.
Yeah.
So you can make it pretty good with Sequoia, but it could be a great thing for the UK. It needs a shot in the arm when it comes to technology, and it needs growth capital, which is highlighted as an investment of £10 million plus. Do we think that Sequoia entering the UK market will be that shot in the arm? Or do we think that, and if so, kind of what kind of companies they're going after? Will this help the ad tech industry, or will they be steering well clear of that at the moment? I'm going to start with you, Christian, and get your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I mean, it'll certainly be part of the shot in the arm. It won't be the complete solution. I think it's indicative of many things. It's indicative of the fact that Sequoia have been very successful and very active, obviously based in and around Silicon Valley. I think it's an example of how investments there are maybe topping out over a number of years. Having lived there worked there for 2.5 years, I understand that space pretty well. I think it's also indicative of post-Brexit, so they're probably looking for something cheap. They probably think that there might be... yeah, there might be value in the UK market.
A couple of fire sales.
Fire sales probably too strong a word. It's just they're probably looking for value. If you're trading in this sort of market, or indeed any market, you're looking for volatility. The UK leaving the EU, it's going to be volatile. There are opportunities there. I think also, you know, the UK is a hotbed for talent. Right. Despite what Oscar Wilde said, you know, two nations separated by the same language, don't underestimate the fact that we both speak English. There is a sort of heartland. There is a kind of a relationship there that makes it easier to do business. And you know, we do have intellectual capital in this country, which is going to be attractive to investors. And I'm not surprised by that move. And I wouldn't think it's the last.
Interesting. Kieran, what are your thoughts? No, he's just shaking his head.
It's nonsense story. This is jingoistic bullshit of the highest order. I am going to pull it straight out. This is the kind of nonsense, post-Brexit nonsense that Boris Johnson... This is a real political story. Sequoia have had a good run, but of late, it's been pretty spectacularly bad. They've had made some really bad investments and they haven't had any sort of big out successes in the last couple of years. As regards ad tech, no, the Brits don't build ad tech. They build ad networks. The best people in Europe building ad tech are the French. Hands fucking down. We can count Critio, Sticky Ads, Teads, Agori. The Brits don't build ad tech. They build agencies and ad networks. So I'm not sure what differences make to anything. If anything, most of the tech sectors in this country are sort of overflowing with money. Fintech, you know, is swimming in capital. I'm not really sure what this does to anything. I mean, Brexit is just a disaster, really, for Britain as a whole. And, you know, you can be positive about it, but I don't see anything upside here. No trade deals, no sort of a breakaway from Europe. The only thing that's actually a value of this country is London. London is the heartbeat of this country, and if the money flows into London, it's great. But London's a global city, and that's the line underneath it.
We've caught you on a good day, haven't we?
I'm telling you, I think this is, yeah, bad story for me all around. Okay. Hits the wrong buttons.
Doesn't it just?
Ireland Jesus. For the win.
I mean, so there's some strong opinions there. Christian, what are your thoughts on Kieran's very strong opinions that actually it's all bullshit? Brexit is bullshit. Sequoia coming to London's bullshit.
Well, I mean, that remains
where do we
to be
go
seen.
From there?
That remains to be seen if they do or they don't. If they do, I agree 100% on two points there. You know, the Brits, we don't really build ad tech. I didn't really answer that question, but yeah, we build networks and we build agencies on top of that, which are valuable businesses in and of themselves. But then London's obviously.
But not one Sequoia will be going after.
They're not high growth businesses. And
No, they're not.
If anything, the agency market is really, really, really strong in this country. But it's not Sequoia. It's the private equity firms that would look for, recurring revenue. I don't know. I mean, Sequoia looks for like high growth businesses and sort of like biotech and, you know, whatever the latest fad is, fintech. But fintech is, like I said, is swimming in money and it's not really showing any real breakout successes. Monzo is still, you know, spending lots of money acquiring customers. It's doing okay, but not profitable. So I'd be interested to see what happens. Maybe I'm completely wrong with this, but I haven't bought into the nonsense of
evidently
post-Brexit.
But London being a global city, that's the point, right? So, and it goes back to what I was saying about don't underestimate the attraction of speaking the same language. And it's easy if you're sat in an office in Silicon Valley to open in London. It's less easy on a number of levels to open in Paris, for example. Right, Paris is an hour and a half away from London. You can base out of there. You can do all of your investment there. I mean, actually, a lot of the stuff that's being built that might be attractive purely from a scalability perspective is going to be, you know, being built in Tel Aviv. Right, there's an awful lot of talent out there building building scalable technology that is on the fringes of sort of old school Europe, if you like to think of it like that. But you know, London is a global city. I agree with you that is fundamental in terms of the UK's Brexit strategy, such as there is one, and I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know if there is one.
Loosely.
Yeah, it's a loosely loose term, but you know, so, yeah, London is definitely unarguably a global city, and it makes sense to base out of here.
Mm. Okay, interesting. Thank you for your opinions there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, fun chat. Next, so news story number two is the news that Roku cut Fox from its platform. This is an interesting story. So it's more on the US streaming wars and kind of US TV wars in general. So Roku temporarily cut Fox Network apps from its platform last week. And basically it's because Fox's contract expired and they hadn't renegotiated a new one. And they basically threatened to pull Fox from, well, they did pull Fox from Roku the day before the Super Bowl was due to air. And the Super Bowl and Fox Sports and Fox Now are the main places that you can reliably watch the Super Bowl for free on Roku's platform. And the reason was that there was a contract negotiation and a contract spat, basically. And Fox called Roku's threats to black out its apps a naked effort to use its customers as pawns to extract better rates. It could have got messier, but thankfully, at the last hour, the deal was done and Fox magically appeared back on Roku as if nothing had happened. But it was an interesting conversation more around how Roku negotiates with OTT publishers. And much like the stories we see from mobile app publishers with Apple App Store and Android, Google Play Store, Roku takes 30% of inventory revenue from app publishers. And it renegotiates with them. It works on really short-term contracts, renegotiates with them regularly to force them to have to negotiate constantly and potentially kind of be done out of a better deal. And what the larger broadcasters that have the more clout do in the US is they try and negotiate longer-term one-off deals with them. And this is largely thought what Fox have been doing as well.
So is it based on a rev share of ads as yes. opposed to... So they're not paying a kind of a carriage fee, are they? Like doing, you know, on the sort of... the cable channels where they pay to be in that bundle. They're not paying that sort of fee to Roku. Is it just like Roku's saying it's a 70-30 split, 30% to us and 70% to you?
It's a 70-30 split. As far as I'm aware, it's not carriage fee related. It's negotiated in very, right. very well, differently.
I think they're working through that. And they I think are, the whole industry absolutely. Is working through yeah. that. And you know, the comment of, you know, them coming out and saying they were surprised that Roku were using their customers as pawns in this. Of course they are.
Mm. Of course they are.
Of course they are going
absolutely.
To do that.
What's the Roku audience in the US? 20 million is it or something like
I
that?
I don't know the exact numbers, but it is the largest streaming platform kind of,
that's interesting.
In the US. It holds a lot of power
yeah.
As the largest one, but then so does Fox. So the question is, and obviously we don't know who backed down. I'm going to assume it's Roku. But Fox backed down. I'm going to assume Roku probably had the upper hand here.
Yeah, I mean, I think Roku are fighting for their lives, right?
Roku
I mean,
are fighting for their lives.
They're fighting for their lives. I mean, yes, they're the biggest platform at the moment, but content is king. And I mean, we're seeing the... I believe that we're going to see the internet over the next 10 years. One of the defining themes of connectivity is you're going to see consolidation, right? No more so than in quote-unquote streaming wars. You're going to get, you know, Disney building their own platform. The tech is being commoditized. Therefore, the only thing that's important is the content,
yeah.
which is why everyone's spending so much money on content. I mean, look, 10 years ago, if you want to watch sport in this country, you bought a Sky Dish. Then BT spent $750 million on sport, and now there are two players
that
in the game.
Pointless.
That's going to go on and on. You can't watch BT.
No, because I don't know how to get it.
Oh, really?
You can get it
through
Sky. I thought
it'd be on Roku. I could pay, but they haven't done a deal with Roku.
No, they haven't done a deal with Roku.
Which is annoying.
No,
because yeah. I pay for it.
But and now you've got Amazon coming into the mix in UK
totally.
Sport as well to make
things
even more complicated.
I didn't see their actual coverage of the soccer.
Yeah,
and
I mean in the States you've got NFL games, you've got Thursday Night Football on Twitter, you've got Facebook entering. Like content is the thing that's going to drive everything, which is why everyone's doubling down on content. Historically, I think I'm right in saying that the most watched show on Netflix was Friends, and that's off the platform at the beginning of the year because they've lost
only in the US though.
But the US is like the world's largest consumer market, right?
It's true.
But this then brings on an interesting question: the way that Roku and platforms like them, so Amazon Prime is another example of that, and Netflix too. But Netflix isn't going down any kind of ad funding route yet, whereas Amazon's kind of dipping its toe in some kind of water. Who knows what? How will these strategies work in Europe? Europe is a very, very different market. And in fact, Europe is are very, very different markets
yep.
than the US is.
Yep.
Will these kind of like, we hold all the power strategies work with the big broadcasters over
no.
here?
No.
How will they negotiate? And they're trying to grow their presence in Europe. How will they fare versus what they're doing in the US?
I believe it will be more piecemeal. I agree with you. You know, immediately both of us said no. I think you might get regulation. France, Germany, you might get that where you absolutely won't get that in the States. They will not regulate anything, as the current opioid crisis proves.
That's very true.
Right. So
great stuff.
Yeah, I know. Amazing. yeah, but
now, guys.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, I mean, you know, it will fragment. But again, content is king. You know, Amazon is a huge player, and they're just scratching the surface. To your point about where they'll go with this, everyone's doubling down on content. The amount that they know about consumers, and indeed the platform they have to deliver, means that they clearly have an advantage. I think, you know, I wasn't joking when I said Roku were fighting for their lives. I think Netflix are going to come under pressure. I wouldn't be surprised if they get bought. You know, you're going to get, I believe you're going to get significant consolidation on the global stage, which in Europe, because of the fragmented nature of this thing called Europe, and it's hilarious, you know, speaking to Americans when they say, oh, you're European, you're like, what exactly does that mean?
That doesn't mean very much, well, especially not to us at the moment.
Yeah, no, exactly. And, you know, sort of proudly, we're you know, loads of different nation states, and that's fine. But it means doing business on the continent is challenging.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess what do we think it could cause? Like, do we think that you mentioned consolidation, Christian, quite a lot? Do we think we're getting to a stage now where everything has to fragment to a certain point before consolidation can then really kick in?
Yeah.
Do we think we could then see maybe another disruptor that comes in and tries to take Roku and play Roku its own game by charging less? We're seeing a lot of different skinny bundles and streaming platforms in the US, but not quite so much in the UK that are really making a footprint. Could we see them try and come up and sort of take play Roku at its own game?
Facebook would probably buy Roku.
Yeah.
That'll make a lot of sense. If they want to get into that game. I mean, you're right. It's a tech play. It's a commoditized play. Mm. But whoever's left on the distribution site will make a lot of money because there'll only be two or three of them who can do it at scale.
That's the point.
And we don't want that to be an American company.
But it will be. But it will be. But it will be. But it will be. And it will be because of the S word that you just mentioned there. It's scale. The bottom line is California has the same economy the size of the UK, right? Mm. There is only 66 million people in this country. It's not that big. Right?
60 million.
But
you lose Scotland and Northern Ireland.
Oh my God.
Unbelievable. Literally one track mind. When's that Pilates? Come on.
You need it. You need some mindfulness, Kieran.
Yeah. Angry man.
I apologise about him, Christian.
No, listen, it's totally fine. Wait till I get my second cup of coffee. It's fine. The point is, the States is a business, is an economy at scale immediately. So you asked about are we going to see any more disruptors? You know, I think that game is over. The jig for that kind of disruptor coming in this particular industry is over. Now it is about scale and consolidation. I think Netflix is vulnerable to being acquired. It wouldn't surprise me if, you know, Apple buy them or someone like that. Facebook buy Roku. We're going to get that consolidation. We know that the internet is moving towards walled gardens. What does Google do when GDPR comes out? They say, well, we're not going to send you any, you know, log level data anymore. If you want to understand things, then you have to do it in the ads data hub. It's like, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they're very similar type of topics, aren't they? In the sense that the walled gardens or the distribution piece we have. But then, if you look at it from the perspective of content providers, creators, it's never been a better time to be a content creator because there are so many companies vying for your content, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be hard, as you say, for a content and tech company merge. Like, so Netflix are doing it. Although they're going to hit a lot of issues because of cash burn, and their investors are going to want to see profit, and they want to see cash flow, and they want to see like recurring income. Mm-hmm. And then when they start seeing churn in the US, they start getting panicky and start selling the stock, and the stock ultimately sort of slides a little bit. And then you've got Disney, who've gone, right, we want to own the distribution part. But the thing about Disney is they own such a wide variety of IP that their content costs are kind of capped. They still spend a lot of money on content creation, but they have such a good back catalog that people are just going to go to it automatically.
Exactly.
I mean, they're an outlier. And then you've got all the challenger brands, I guess, you know, Amazon, who've just done a brilliant job. Mm. But their model is much, much more than just Netflix's straight out sub model. They've got the whole e-commerce piece.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's they're like, buy this so you can buy more shit on our platform. And they're
an ecosystem, right? I mean,
yeah,
Amazon, exactly. Amazon aren't a merchant. They're a high street.
But they're very different from the Netflix models. You know what I mean? I think we're taking your point on it's a tech world. Like, it's a distribution will be around a tech world. I mean, Apple are coming into this space as well. And Apple are focused on sort of the prime sort of market. They want to build the rundle, as Professor Galloway calls it, recurring bundle of, you know, your new iPhone, your Apple TV, and your all your music and shit all bundled together for a cost every month. They have 500 million customers paying $60 a year or whatever it is. It's this incredible amount of money that then Apple's market cap could triple or quadruple because they've got recurring income every year instead of, like, you know, one-off buys. But again, they need the content, and them buying Netflix isn't the craziest idea. I actually think that Apple might end up buying Disney, which would be incredible.
And
but
also
I'm not sure
really
if that would be
expensive, right?
$250 billion market cap right now, but probably gone up because they just announced their figures for their subscriptions in the US. It's 28.5. So I was doing my maths in my head. That means they've got like 3 billion run rate every year in terms of like subscribers. If they get to 50, to 6 billion. Now, a typical SaaS business is valued at the top line revenue, so 30 times top line revenue. So you could argue that another 180 million lopped on top of the 220 that Apple is already. I could be wrong with these figures. I think it's 220 or 240. So you're talking about four or 500 billion. Maybe that's a bit chunky for Apple to take a bite out of. Yeah. But certainly now, they have enough cash in the bank to buy Disney.
Yeah, I mean, I think
and Spotify at the same time, which would be a nice little add-on for. But I'm not sure that type of M&A would be allowed. I would say that that type of stuff would be blocked in Europe straight away because they just there's a bad taste in the mouth going just kind of veering across your argument. There's a bad taste in the mouth in Brussels right now for scaled US entities. Like, nobody in Brussels wants to see Google, Facebook, Amazon. And who's the third one? Apple.
Google, Facebook, Amazon.
The GAFA. To have a complete and utter control over the digital ecosystem. Because there's a lot of people, German, French, Dutch, Northern European, who do not, it doesn't sit well that these large American companies are just literally taking a massive bite out of the tax base.
Yeah.
And then funneling everything through an Irish proxy, which then is put into the fucking Cayman Islands where they pay no tax on it. Yeah. That is not going to sit well. So
it's been like that for 10 years.
Yeah. But it won't be. I guarantee you we are in a new phase of this. I think that we've hit the threshold. The fact that Margaret Vestager is got more power now and is in there, she's foaming at the mouth to literally tear these people apart.
So what
I don't mean that in a kind of a derogatory way at all. I'm just
she's keen, right? She's keen and
pretty amazing woman. I have a lot of respect for her.
She is. She's a very amazing.
But then let's see some action. I don't disagree, you know, with the we're beginning to see, you know, we're beginning to see evidence of legislators viewing people's data rights as fundamental human rights, but the legislation's got a long way to catch up with this. This is complex. This is, you know, and regulation is a pretty blunt tool. I'm not arguing against regulation. I just think we need to get it right. And history is not littered with examples of regulators getting it right. Look at the banking crisis, right? Look at the banking crisis. What happened out of that is that politically motivated regulation came in order to beat up bankers to win votes. By the way, I'm not in any way defending bankers now, although I am an ex-banker. But what the regulators were trying to do there was to say, look, the fundamental problem is you cannot be a high street bank and own people's mortgages and also play the Russian roulette that is the stock market. You can't do those things. So what they should have come in, and they said, if you want a banking license to do mortgages, then you can't be an investment bank. But they didn't have the guts to do that. So what they did is they came in and they said, oh, actually, bankers' salaries need to be capped at X, bankers' bonuses need to be capped at X. So what they actually did, what the banks did, was they put people's basic salaries up to keep the talent in the business, which means you load up the cost base, which means you've now got to take more risk. So that actually the regulation had exactly the inverse effect of what it did. And my fear is they're going to do that to win political votes. They won't understand the incredibly complex ecosystem, and it will just play in to these companies' hands. Look, Google and Facebook, undeniably, after GDPR and CCPA, their hand has been strengthened.
Yeah, there's a joke there, actually, because in ad tech, we often refer to the fact that we are kind of the last unregulated industry, and we give an example of the finance industry. Like, the finance industry, you wouldn't ever get away with that. But actually, Kristen, you're making excellent points that, well, they did, and that was with regulation in place. And the regulation was the reason why they were getting away with it, because it was put down in the favour of the wrong hands,
well,
basically.
Well, certainly now, yeah, certainly now. I mean, you know, hedge funds are still, they're taking more risk. Don't tell me that investment banks take risk for a living. That's how they pay the bills. Like, what they needed to do was separate people's mortgages from that, so that if an institution which takes risk for a living goes under, okay, that goes under. You can't then have people kicked out.
But then
out of
the
their
housing
homes.
Market doesn't go right, under in
exactly,
the process.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, regulation. The thing is that Google might be preparing itself for a backlash from the antitrust regulators.
Yeah,
right,
that's
now
come through today. Justice Department's after them again.
Yeah, so there's a big story in the Wall Street Journal today about this very subject. Now, Google have broken out certain things in their P&L, which are, you know, on their end of year report for 2008. which has never been done before. $17 billion fucking dollars, as if they need any more money. I mean, they're a $162 billion company. It makes me sick even thinking about it.
Yeah, but 113 of that is advertising.
Yeah, which makes it even more nauseous. And 62 of that was actually not 62 billion of the advertising.
98 was basically ad search.
Yeah, 56 billion was in Europe. So most of that is actually they've just basically stripped mine the entire European market, which is depressing. But
that's my point. Exactly, the regulators don't understand.
I don't
that.
Think it's anything to do with the regulators. I think that they haven't moved quick enough because it is quite complicated, and a lot of these politicians are just morons. They have no idea what they're doing. You know, the recent question, Zuckerberg on the Hill, was a good example, and just recent performances in the Westminster, and not even my own in Ireland's Parliament. Like, people asking questions when you're going, you haven't a fucking clue,
right?
And but there are. It's an education process, right?
Sure.
And once they get their head around it, that the data piece is so important, that things will change. Look, who knows what's going to happen with the whole ITP cookie sort of burn thing, cookie apocalypse, whatever you want to call it. It will hurt Google. It certainly will hurt its 21 billion Google members network business, which they broke out in their end of year report, 21 billion. So I think they're the TAC in that's probably 70%, so they're paying out $14 billion to whoever it is, and they're making, you know, $7 billion themselves. So that might hurt that part of the business. But, you know, look, you could go around blaming Google for all these things, but I actually think this is probably the best thing to happen ad tech ever. It's a bit like, you know, we talk about, laugh about it here, like it's a bit like when Trenton and Trainspotting was coming off the gear, like, you know.
You've mentioned it before. Yeah, but yeah,
it's the baby climbing the wall with the 360 head. We are yet at that stage, you know. We're just itching the arms right now, right, looking for that kick. And you see every trying to save the cookie. It's hilarious. Oh, the TCF and blah, blah, blah. I can do this with a first party cookie. It's like they're trying to replicate the old model. Say, give it up. It's
right,
done.
Right.
Let's move on. Let's figure it out, like, you know. So I have no idea where I went with that.
I don't know. What was the question? And I asked the question too.
I know.
Who knows?
I think the Google will be regulated in some shape or form, but I think what they'll do, they'll jump before they're pushed. So they'll make...
You think Google will jump
before
they're
pushed? They will make a sacrifice of something.
Yeah.
It won't be tinkering. It'll have to be... Someone was saying, oh, we'll close AdX and make it open bidding. What nonsense.
Yeah.
That is not going to satisfy a power-hungry antitrust person. They want Google to do something substantive and get out of ad tech altogether. Please get out of ad tech, Google. Get the fuck out of ad tech. That would make us all happy. Get rid of DV360. Give open access to YouTube. Sell me AdSense. To me, Kieran O'Kane, I would buy it.
You will buy AdSense yourself. Out of your own pocket.
$1. I'll take it off as a charity. But I still want the AdWords demand. Give me the AdWords demand for at least 5 years until I figure it out. But I think if Google did that, we could let... Go away. Just go the fuck away.
Yeah.
That's all I can say.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I'm not sure that's going to happen.
You exhaust me when you do this.
Why?
Go on massive Google rants.
Well,
I
kind of go through like things with Google. I don't like them.
You were fine with them last week. It was Facebook you were all over.
Genuinely, I like Google. I just want them to go away from an industry I'm in. Just go away.
Why do you need more money?
Why do you need more money? Why do you need more money? Why do you need to take more money from our industry? Just piss off.
I might we'll keep it in for prosperity.
Okay.
Why do you need more money? They're just going to keep going because that's what, you know, all multinational companies do, right? I mean, they're just going to keep going, and
they have to keep growing.
They
have shareholders.
By definition, they have shareholders. They have to keep growing. The really challenging part for, in this case, you know, the European democracies who might seek to regulate is Google, Amazon, and others. These tech companies are so embedded in the culture of the voting populace. That's the challenge, is how are you going to regulate against this? Like, okay, if you look at Alexa or other, you know, home speakers, if you'd gone back in time and said to a population, do you want to put a corporate-owned listening device that's always on in your sitting room? Everyone would have said no.
We were talking about it today, actually. I've just stopped using it in the house altogether. I just plugged it out. I go, what am I doing?
What are you doing?
Whereas my house, I've got to say, unfortunately, my house is fully connected. Like, every single room has got some kind of Alexa-enabled device in it. And actually, I think about it sometimes and go, what the hell am I playing at? It's dangerous.
I think it's crazy, actually.
But you're both doing it.
Yeah.
Kieran did pull out very quickly.
I stopped.
And I'm not on Facebook. And I'm not on Instagram. Message from airport executive. So they've started doing this. You know, we're offering X amount of one else. Did anybody else get that today?
No.
So I got like a WhatsApp.
What is it? It's an airport executive,
they're like a taxi service to the airport. Obviously.
So you're basically getting a WhatsApp ads.
Yeah. I got like
targeted messages.
Yeah.
Right. Interesting.
I'm not interested in that.
Well, no.
Well, I mean, you know, some sort of lookalike model would disagree.
That's
exactly the point, isn't it?
Whether you know it or not, you are interested in it.
Some sort of lookalike model. That's exactly the point.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Right. Third story?
Well, not.
No, you're still not. You're still going?
No, I'm not. Look, I have to backtrack a little bit. Yeah. Like, Google.
Go on then. Here we go.
I feel like I need to sort of, to kind of like put things straight.
Let's sort this out. Yeah.
Right. Look, they're an important part of the ecosystem. They'll find other ways to make money. But I think that ultimately they will be forced to spin off certain parts of their business. And I think that would be a good... Google will still be able to make money everywhere else, and we will as well. And that's the happy medium I will.
Okay.
Love to see.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
And are you still offering to buy AdSense from them for $1?
100%. I think AdSense is awesome business. But I need the AdWords.
Don't tell them that.
Yeah. But it is, though. It's a fantastic...
Yeah, you've only offered $1.
But that's mostly because of AdWords, though. That's AdWords demand. That's everything comes from search for Google. You know?
It does. Yeah. It absolutely does. Yeah. That is their core revenue stream. Anyway, on to our third story. And this is a story about Byte. It has topped 1 million downloads. And in the process, it's also going ad-funded.
In Albania?
No. Actually not. But... Kieran, do you know what Byte is?
Is this Byte Dance?
No, this is not Byte Dance.
It's the new Vine thing.
Yes, it's a new Vine. So could be confused with Byte Dance, who of course own TikTok.
I see copyright issues coming.
Yeah, well, this is the thing, exactly. Byte Dance, the Chinese company that owns TikTok, the other short form video app.
Right.
Byte has just launched and it's been built by Vine co-founder, Dom Hoffman. And Vine was shut down after it was bought by Twitter in 2016. It's a 6-second short form video app that was very, very popular at the time and almost kind of a bit ahead of its time in some ways. Actually, short form is now very much the thing, but back then it was still a bit nascent. And in its first week, it's hit, according to Sensor Tower, it's hit 1.3 million downloads, mostly from North America and Great Britain. And when I say North America and Great Britain, I mean 90% was from North America, and mostly on iOS rather than Android. But at the same time, it was hit with instant controversy because bots hit it very, very hard, including porn bots. And of course, all the early adopters went and took all the best usernames. So all the famous people like Trump, Taylor Swift, their usernames have already been taken by nefarious people. Now, obviously,
they're two separate people, pretending to be.
Oh,
like,
yes.
Trump, Taylor Swift.
No, they merged, okay. Didn't you hear?
Okay,
yeah,
no, good.
Yeah.
Okay.
So all the usernames are taken. So there's going to be lots of dodgy dealings going on. Also, age issues. It was been marketed as a 12 plus platform, and the content is dodgy at best.
Yeah. So
and
it's
I mean,
a
very dodgy.
Platform.
Supposed to be. But of course, it's been overtaken by dodgy content creation. It's very, you know, it's not safe for children.
No.
It's not safe for most bloody adults, frankly. Some of the stuff that's going on there, it's very dodgy, you know, jokes about people dying from coronavirus. It's not a good place at the moment. It's the sort of thing you get with a brand new app going viral so quickly that it needs to get metered out. And Dom Hoffman has said, you know, they're going to go and sort this. But the problem I see with all this is that they've also just started running advertising. And if Nike is their first ad partner, they've basically sponsored a category section on the kind of the homepage of Byte. And I'm talking like I know what how Byte works. I've got no idea. For me, I think that's a huge issue if the content on there is anything but brand safe by the looks of things, and they're now trying to court advertisers and big money advertisers, because the way that Byte works is it does a rev share with content creators. So it will need, if it's going to be able to fund this rev share agreement with content creators, it will need scale. It will need big money advertisers. Yeah. But they are not going to go anywhere near it if the content remains the way it is. So what do we think about this?
Is it... Just explain
six,
to me
six
what...
Second, 6-second videos on your in-app videos.
See, that's what ByteDance does. That's
TikTok.
TikTok. Yeah. So what's the point in doing another TikTok?
Well, again, so obviously, this is the other challenging thing, right? So TikTok, we talked about this in a previous podcast. TikTok, very Chinese orientated company, Chinese values. They're trying to become Western, but they're still very Asian focused. So they know how to scale from an Asian perspective. But Bytes, not Byte Dance, Bytes will have the kind of North American, the US view, the Western view, and they will know how to scale from that perspective. So you'll probably see that TikTok is massive on Android and Byte is massive on iOS.
Yep.
And they're gonna start clashing in the middle.
Yep.
And TikTok has already come under fire for its content, the brand safety yep. issues it has. It's already worked out how it's going to try and mitigate that.
Yeah, the money that teenagers are spending to, you know,
exactly
with influencers,
for the
yeah.
sponsors. Yeah, yep, exactly. That's terrifying. Spend 30 quid and I will say hello to you.
Spend 4,000.
Basically.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you've got kids terrifying. Racking up proper bills, right?
Absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, is there room, given the fact that they are both very, very different companies from very different areas, both sort of doing the same thing, is there room for Byte in this market? And I mean, a brand safe Byte that advertisers will want to use that is targeting the right audience, or do we think that TikTok will take over?
No, there's room. Definitely.
There is room?
Yeah, there's room. I mean, I think your hypothesis is a good one. You know, TikTok are Asian focused, obviously, but they've got challenges. It's quite clear, you know, Kieran, to your point earlier, everyone is craving content. I think you said there's never been a better time to be a content creator. Therefore, the more platforms that kind of come out, you know, feed into that. I mean, you've got Quibi that's launching later this
I've never
year.
Even heard of that.
So Quibi is a
Meg Whitman.
Yeah, exactly. Meg Whitman's new gear.
And
gal.
The dude from right. the Hollywood Svengali dude.
Yeah.
What's his name? Bowly headed dude. I can't remember his name.
Kojak.
But they've raised like
Telly Savalas. Wow, that's a frightening 70s reference.
Yeah, no. Savalas TV. That's
no,
crazy.
No. But
that's Tangent and a Half, isn't it?
No, but you know, with there is room for more platforms. Whether they will be successful or not, to what extent they are able to scale, discuss. But people are reinventing and disrupting what content means. So Quibi is saying, I think it's 10 minutes or 15 minutes or something like that. It's 10. So it's 10 minutes or less. But they're getting major kind of artists, like I think Scorsese signed up to do it, you know, and begin to start experimenting with storytelling in that genre. 6 seconds. I don't know if Scorsese is interested in that, if The Irishman's anything to go by.
I very much doubt it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you know, yes, we're going to get more and more of this stuff.
Okay, interesting. Kieran, what are your thoughts on the future of Byte?
Oh God,
start? You look bewildered.
I just think this is all just too much.
Here we go again.
We need as a society to calm down.
I've chosen the wrong stories for him today. I really
get
have.
Rid of these bloody platforms. I don't know. I agree. I don't know. I think I really hope the next generation just take a look at the damage these platforms have done to humanity and just think about their own mental health. I would actually probably ban phones from schools. I'm actually serious.
No, 100%.
I mean, we don't talk about this on the podcast. I just think it's wrong for teenagers to have phones, especially like young teenagers. It's just they're not mentally prepared for the war, for the craziness that goes on. I mean, if this shit was around when I was young, I would have been in jail.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Quite, yeah.
I mean, like, I'm not the only one. Too. Most of my mates have been in jail. Mm. And it's responsible for how boring the next generation is going to be, because they're not allowed to drink, they're not able to go mad, and we've got all these kids who are worried about their own mental health and wrapping themselves in cotton wool. And I think that's a problem, for a serious problem in the world of depression and all the rest of it. It's just, these kids can't be themselves because they're being photographed and put on 7,000 different platforms. And I don't, you know what? I want this to fail. I want it to fail so badly. I can't even begin to tell you.
Okay.
I'm not, but anyway, I don't know what this relevant to ad tech. I think the kids should read good newspapers and watch TV and stop using YouTube and Facebook. And I think the world would be a better place.
That's
outside, learn to make fires.
Oh my God. Have a beer.
Yeah.
Talk to the girl next to you or the boy next to you. Have a conversation. Jesus.
Yeah. You know, look, absolutely right. You know,
play football.
Yeah, look, absolutely right. You know, the notion of expressing yourself through a screen is, you know, the academic commentary on this is myriad, right?
It feeds into the point where, this is a serious point, Lindsay, I know I'm off piece there, but is it a point that there's going to be too much content, right? And these platforms are going to die in the vine, right? Because like literally at the minute, right? I don't know personally how you guys feel, but I feel overwhelmed by all the choice But I just come on.
There is too much choice.
Sometimes I just turn the TV off and listen to podcasts. Well, I have radio. Radio 4 or RT1 or whatever.
I haven't had a television for 7 years.
There you go.
Yeah, no, but I'm...
You being serious?
Yeah, I haven't had a TV for 7 years.
Wow.
100%.
How do you watch your various streaming channels?
I will watch it on a screen. I have a... Yeah, if it like...
On a screen?
Yeah, like a laptop. A laptop. So if I want to, do that.
Right.
Well, actually, but, our absent co-host, absent co-host Rachel Smith, she moved into her house a year ago, and I don't even know if she's even bought a TV yet.
Yeah,
it took her so long to buy one. She kind of didn't think it was that important, and said, "I'll get around to it eventually." But yeah. I watch my laptop at the moment.
The thing about Quibi, it's interesting. You mentioned Quibi there. I don't know why. I just feel that we're there's this glut of money that is sloshing around for these. You know, these content distribution platforms, I just feel it's the wrong place to be putting money, right? Because we already have enough of these content creators. And it goes back to our point about the GAFA, right? They've taken up so much money, so much oxygen in the whole ecosystem that there is nowhere to go but to build these ridiculous... I don't even know how you get 15 minutes on a mobile and I'll pay, what, $10 a month? Why would you do that? What I mean, on the tube, we've got Candy Crush... You know, you've got Bubble Girl. Is it Bubble Girl?
Bubble Witch Saga.
I always get this wrong.
You do always call it Bubble Girl. I do. I don't know why.
There's another.
There should be one called Bubble Girl.
Maybe there should. Yeah. But
you know,
King, take note.
I think that someone said it's not. It's the attention economy, right? There's only so much attention we have, and I just feel all these platforms are going to start to fall over.
But you make a really good point. I mean, the attention economy. That's great. But you know, the changing nature of what attention is. You know, how long can you pay attention for? You read Nick Carr's book, The Shallows, like we're fundamentally rewiring how we view that, how we interact with each other. And I take your point, that may not be a good thing, but you can't say it's not happening. It's definitely happening. Connectivity is having an impact on society, everything from purchase behavior through to what you know, voting behavior, everything in between. Now, we can argue whether it's a good or bad thing. And I agree, like it's not all rosy in the garden, but it is happening and we need to get on board, understand that it's happening and start to act in, you know, if you're talking about it from a regulatory perspective, acting in our citizens' own interests or best interests.
But it does highlight the you talk about regulation again, and there's the regulation around advertising and data. But there's also needs to be a stronger play around corporate social responsibility in this as well, because we talk about social media platforms and how kids today, you know, can't cope, and there's this kind of whole pressure. There's a lot of pressure on them, and there's many mental issues that are coming their way that we've, you know, not seen like in our generation.
And what's worse is the parents as well.
Exactly.
They've got like the new millennials now, kids, whatever they call the next generation. Yeah. Yeah. They're going to be so mollycoddled. They might not even be human beings. Like.
Exactly. Like, but actually, the corporate social responsibility aspect of this comes from, well, actually, if a lot of this is happening via social media platforms like Instagram, like Snap, like TikTok, Byte, Quibi, whatever else is going to come and enter these young children's minds, actually, should advertisers not be taking more of a stand and saying we will not help monetize these platforms, we will not actually put money into them if they're impacting our future generations? Is there an angle around there somewhere?
But there wasn't some legislation in the UK recently around advertising to kids under a certain age. It was pretty draconian, and there was a big
pushback
from advertising. Every time I hear an advertiser bemoaning the fact they can't track somebody or they can't target kids, honest, I don't know what's going through their heads, because that's brand damage straight away. Like, as soon as that gets out into a newspaper or whatever, you know, you're talking whatever way you measure sort of brand equity, you're going down by saying we want to target kids or we're giving out because we can't track or measure certain things. I'm going, like, you know, come on, seriously, you know.
That's incredibly, like, naive at best, right? You know, Look, society is not, or history is not littered with examples of corporations acting in society's best interest.
Certainly
they
not.
Act in corporate's best interest, and it, like, what would we expect them to do? Like, that's literally why they exist.
They're public companies or shareholders by
Correct.
And large, so,
Correct.
Yeah.
I'm very surprised I haven't seen a cultural pushback against it called blackout or whatever it is, and people actively just deciding to kind of, like, drop out of the data economy, right? And actually say, I'm out, right? No more Facebook. And you know what? I tell you this, when I came off Facebook about 6 years ago, I was, every month I nearly went on. It was almost like going back.
Really?
Yeah, I swear to God, it was like,
Well, you back get to that. Your train spotting.
Oh, analogy again. Yeah, it was very, very much so. It was, I was trained to kind of go on Facebook. You know, you, a habit, like you, it takes an awful long time to untrain the mind in terms of a habit, the habit loop, you know? You got the cue, you got the routine, and you got the reward, right? And the reward is like the recognition for your stupid post. I mean, I suppose if all I've done is transferred some of that bad behavior into LinkedIn. I got off Twitter now. LinkedIn has literally become Facebook. It's been Facebook-ized. That's a word.
So you're basically just a morphine addict then, rather than a heroin addict.
The, what do you call the cheap stuff to have in the clinics? Not the
fentanyl.
No. Is it morphine? No, it's the
morphine.
It's the really crap stuff. It's like little syrupy soup.
I don't know enough about this.
Exiting this conversation.
All right.
I don't know where it's going either. To be honest with you.
There was a point here.
Yeah, back in front of the microphone, please.
There was a point here. I think that the point is, Bite is going into a very messy market. I would say that, you know, where a couple of years ago it was much more cut and dry. You know, you had Facebook, and then you had MySpace, and you had Facebook, and then you had Twitter, and then you had Snap, and it just feel like a natural progression. And now you've got you got Bite, and you got like. TikTok, and you've got Quibi, and you've got all these different things competing for attention. I think it's very, very hard to launch a platform right now. I think it's really, really not. It's a very noisy market. And as Lindsay said, I think, you know, the point that a lot of people are aware of this behavior from, aware that their children need to be sort of managed in many ways, aware that they need to manage themselves, and aware that social media has a very detrimental effect to your mental health and also the way you think and see the world. I mean, like, you know, just Google Maps is a good example. Like sometimes I go, I actually don't know where I'm going here. If I didn't have Google Maps, where am I going? Like, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And I find it, is that damaging me in some way that I can't, you know,
read a map?
Yeah. Or even like mentally be aware where I am in terms of spatial awareness and all the rest of it. Or even, you know, like remembering a recipe and just going, I'll go. I just think that we as a society become more stupid. It's just
I mean, it's that argument of Plato and Aristotle, right? I mean, what constitutes knowledge, right? I can't remember. One of them allegedly said to the other, well, you know, I don't have to retain the information to know it. I can like write it, you know, we invent the alphabet. I write stuff down. I can look it up, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, society is evolving. I mean, I think that's the only thing that we can be sure of is that as much as it might be tempting to kind of put the brakes on, history tells us that you can't put the brakes on. There aren't too many examples throughout history of society voting not to move forward on this train. So it's about managing that.
But this ties into a lot of what we were talking about before the podcast, Christian, and kind of stuff that you're kind of quite interested in at the moment. And it's society is evolving, but is it evolving beyond the human mind's capacity? And kind of you're talking about kind of the power of what the mind that exists behind the ad and what we're looking at and how we talked about the attention economy a lot. And there's a lot to be said around this kind of actually, is it now too much for us to be able to handle? You referred earlier to kind of the rewiring of minds.
Yeah.
Actually, are they not being rewired quickly enough for what's being shoved in front of us?
There's a danger. I mean, you know, I'd hate to live in a world where we devalue the human mind, which is a wonderful thing. I mean, this is, we're the species that, you know, we put people on the moon and invent cures for terrible diseases. And, you know, I mean, like, it's amazing. We're the top of the food tree for a reason, right? And it's not because we're the fastest or the strongest. So I'd hate to live in a world where we sort of admit that. But certainly there's a danger of the dumbing down of society. Certainly there's a danger of, you know, we've spoken about resilience, you know, my undergrads in history, which if you think about that as kind of the original trending data subject, you know, global conflict, we hear about these conflicts and these terrible things going on in the world, and there are terrible things, but you know, it's hard not to see in a world which is colliding, cultures are colliding as they have done throughout flashpoints in history. It's hard not to see where that spills over into like meaningful conflict. That hasn't happened for a very long time. There are very few people around the world in senior positions who have any concept of what some form of total warfare looks like, right? We have lost that. And it's a great thing because, you know, the end of the Second World War is a very, very long time ago. But, you know, history teaches us that, you know, if it doesn't repeat itself, it certainly rhymes. And there's that's the fear here, is that this endless you know, craven kind of chasing of, if we're talking about, you know, corporate social responsibility versus corporate profit, there has to be a balance. Otherwise, society will balance itself. And that's the way it knows how to balance itself if you look at history, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And what do you think in terms of like how history is playing out itself, and it's not repeating itself, it's certainly rhyming. How is what's being built to handle that? How is the technology behind all of this actually helping history rhyme rather than repeat itself?
What is happening politically, without going into details on particular sides, but everyone knows what's happening. The platforms are the concept that platforms have allowed people to espouse and only exist within their own echo chamber is a word that's often used.
Ad tech,
yeah,
absolutely,
right. You know,
because that, we don't let anybody else outside listen to what we're saying.
The cookie's dying,
right? But that's not a, you know, that's not a controversial view that we're saying. I'm certainly not the first or the last that is saying. I mean, I think that's pretty much taken as read. But there are real ramifications for that, right? And I think society is just figuring that out.
Yeah, interesting.
So what you're saying is it's all about post-click rather than the post-view.
Well,
post-click attribution.
Talking about, what goes around comes around, and history rhyming, yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant, Lindsay.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. It doesn't repeat itself, right? So we're going back to IOs, managed service.
Well, exactly, yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, why not?
Yeah, absolutely.
But there's some interesting platforms like the attention economy. You know, there's a group of advertisers that are looking to capture and measure attention, share of attention, rather than actions.
Yeah.
Right. You know, you look at platforms like Truex, for example, that are going around saying we want to reduce ad load, the number of ads out there, but we want to make them better and more engaging. And here's a metric for that. Okay, that's interesting. The notion of human beings wanting to engage with companies around this thing called brand, this kind of emotional this emotional engagement that you have with one brand or another, one government or another, one service or another, whatever, that's not going away. How that expresses itself, you know, is changing and morphing, and that's the fun, that's the intellectual challenge and excitement of the industry. But it's, you know, it's not going away. People are still doing that stuff.
Yeah, very true. I think on that note, that is all we have time for today. I would say if last week's podcast was a cathartic rant, this one's almost been existential, really.
I think it's more religious than that.
Yep, sure.
I mean, you get to a point where you just go, we're drowning in tech, basically.
We're drowning in tech, yeah.
And data.
I mean, what a great note to end the Mad Tech podcast on.
Wow, drowning
Jesus.
In tech.
Well, not really drowning in tech, but drowning in shit tech.
Because that's better somehow.
Well, you know, if you can swim past it, you're great. Like,
okay,
you know.
Yeah. Well, if you buy AdSense, you'll be able to swim past on a cruise ship.
I'm going to say this, right? AdSense is a brilliant product. It is it's robust. It powers nearly a million sites. It is a fantastic business. Okay, revenues are going down because Google said it is, but it still is one of the best businesses Google ever bought. And by the way, like everything Google does, it didn't build it.
It bought it. Yeah. On that note, we have to close off because you have to get off to Pilates, Kieran.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. So it's a shame to end really it on this note, but Kieran is off to Pilates. I want to say thank you to Kieran.
Thanks.
Sort
Lindsay.
Of.
Wait.
Yeah. Well, you know why. And thank you very much to Christian for coming in. It's been great to have you.
Thanks,
this has been the Mad Tech Podcast. Thank you very much for listening.